This Friday at 7:30 p.m., Fontana will present New York Polyphony, a quartet of male a cappella voices. It's the first time this twice Grammy-nominated group has appeared in Kalamazoo, and just the second time they've concertized here in Michigan. Jeffrey Williams is the artistic director and sings countertenor. I spoke to him by phone last week. First of all, it's a real pleasure to talk to you, Jeffrey Williams. What does your holiday season look like as a vocal group? I know it's important to all musicians. They're pretty busy around this time.
Well, the group is busy. In fact, we start in Missoula, Montana, where I'm speaking with you now. We have a concert on November 30th, and we go through San Francisco, Portland, and McMinnville, Oregon, and then Cleveland before we get to Kalamazoo. So we've got a pretty full week leading up to this performance in Kalamazoo.
Wow. One of the things I read about New York Polyphony is that there's actually five members if you include the acoustic of the space. Is that something you especially have to look out for and talk to presenters with?
It depends. It's certainly something that we talk about in our sound check. And there are certain ways we approach repertoire, for example, that might be different from our recording. We recorded in a nice chapel in New Jersey in it used to be a seminary. It's just a school now. So that was a nice acoustic in which we could do lots of different things. But if we're in a concert hall that might have very good acoustics or one that maybe doesn't have such good room, we'll change the approach we have to repertoire. But I think our basic approach to singing in general doesn't change, which is that we're four individual voices that fortunately come together very easily, and we tend to refer to balancing our sound rather than blending it. Like we might use that word with a choir to talk about sopranos blending with sopranos and tenors blending with one another. We try and have our bass and baritone blend together as a foundation for the upper two voices, the tenor and the countertenor. Mm. So we do think of the room as the fifth member, and sometimes it's a very big and resonant acoustic, and sometimes it's not so much. But that's the advantage of being just four members of the group, is we can really balance our sound to any room, which is a real pleasure, especially when we're on the road.
Well, here's where I should tell our listeners that the concert will be in the Dalton Center Recital Hall at Western Michigan University, which has I'd say a balanced. It does have some resonance in it, but isn't like one of the cathedrals downtown. So a good balance. And the concert is this Friday at 7:30 p.m. Full details are at the Fontana website, fontanamusic.org. Well, one of the things I wrote down in shorthand here about the group is making me smile as I look at it. I wrote down, started off as hired guns for mystery plays in 2006.
Oh, right. Well, the reason we like singing at Christmas time so much is because that's how we got our start in 2006. A colleague of mine who works for public radio was putting together a Christmas time program which featured medieval plays which had been translated into modern English. And so we programmed some very old Middle English carols to accompany those plays. And then we found some modern composers' settings of those same texts. And it's been very much the basis of the group's repertoire, the group's sound, just from that beginning. And because we were sort of brought in without a lot of preparation time, we really learned how to be a group very quickly, singing for microphones rather than, you know, going around to various places and doing concerts. We had our first CD out before we'd sung, I think, two concerts ever. So we learned very much how to be a group for microphones, and then we learned how to go on the road together and put concert programs together. So that's how that start happened.
I've heard the group also likens itself to a string quartet with the family of instruments represented from high to low. Can you elaborate on that a little?
Sure. The four of us are very well-trained conservatory singers. And we've done our very fair share of time singing in choirs. But the approach that we've taken when we go on the road, especially when we're singing for chamber music series, is that we want to sort of break down the walls between choral music and and other chamber music. Because we're singing music from, you know, pre-chamber music scenarios like string quartets or chamber orchestras, we're really trying to bring the music that was the chamber music of the day, either carol singing or some sacred music, into the chamber music world. And so we do like to approach our sound and the way we present ourselves on stage as four individuals who work together, just like you'd see a string quartet. So I'm the countersinger, I'm the top voice, so I guess I'm sort of like the first violin, and our bass Craig is like the cello. And then in between, we have our second violin, who's the tenor, and the viola is our baritone. And there are times when sometimes you want to hear more of the second violin, you want to hear more of the viola, depending on how the composer set it. And that's the real beauty of Renaissance polyphony, which is our basis, sacred Renaissance music. And because the composers weren't looking to write, you know, melodies with accompaniment so much, a lot of times because of the four intimate voices, it works in a cathedral, it works in a concert hall, that the balance comes out. And that's why we try and approach it as a string quartet rather than a homogenized sound like you might get with a really good choir.
And here's a reminder for all who are instrumentalists out there that this concert may provide some illumination about both history and how voices really are the foundation of instrumental music as well.
That's right. And we are really bringing the ancient world into the new, and vice versa. We have some music from as early as the late 1400s, and then music that was written 3 years ago. One piece is based on an old Irish chant. It was written by a friend of ours named Michael McGlynn, who's out of Dublin, mm-hmm. the director of the group called the Nuna. Mm-hmm. And he wrote a piece for us 4 or 5 years ago called O Pia Virgo Mater, which you can find on our record, Sing Thee Noel. And he wrote it as an homage to the great English composer John Taverner, who died a few years ago. And that mixes both this old chant that he knew as a boy, this composer, and his love for the great Orthodox English composer, John Taverner. So it's a blending of a lot of different worlds. We have some music from Henry VIII's songbook. We have some music from the Flemish Renaissance, which influenced very much the Italian Renaissance. We have some music by a rather stark English composer, Peter Maxwell Davies. We have some American folk hymns, like I Wonder as I Wander. We have an old German carol, Quem Pastoras Laudavere, which is composed by, or arranged by, a composer out of Missouri named Susan Labar. She's the Missouri Composer Laureate. So it's a pretty broad program, even within the scope of a holiday repertoire.
And there's lots to explore on the New York Polyphony website, newyorkpolyphony.com. The other members are tenor Stephen Caldecott Wilson, baritone Christopher Dylan Herbert, and bass Craig Phillips. And you, Jeffrey Williams, are listed as artistic or music director. And what does that mean for this group?
Well, it's interesting because we don't actually have a musical director. I come in with most of the ideas about repertoire and a very basic idea of how we should approach a piece from the beginning. And once we've learned the notes and rhythms of a piece, which we're fortunate to do very quickly, then it's really our own decision amongst the four of us of how we want to interpret the piece. So if we come in and decide, well, maybe we should try this a click faster, or maybe this key doesn't work, or maybe we don't want to do this in Latin, maybe we want to try this in English or French or German, that's where it's really a wonderful collaboration, or we sometimes call it a sloppy democracy amongst the group. But I've always had a love of early music, especially in vocal music. So I bring the very basic first impulse of what we're going to do with the group, and then I have the privilege of getting to share it with these three other guys, and they have wonderful ideas, which is great to be able to share.
Are there any groups that precede New York Polyphony that you might credit with laying down some groundwork for this
Sure.
kind of group today?
Sure, sure. Well, I grew up as a big fan of the Kingsingers. We're celebrating their 50th anniversary this year.
Uh-huh.
And the group out of England that called the Hilliard Ensemble just retired 2 years ago after 40 years of singing together. And we're good friends with the group called the Orlando Consort. And we have good friends in Trio Medieval, lots of other smaller groups that are still going on that are inspirational to us. And we've had the opportunity now to get to work with some other younger groups overseas and in the States who are trying to do what we're doing, which is bringing this vocal chamber music to the forefront.
For some reason, the name Monteverdi just keeps zinging in the back of my mind as someone who spent a lot of effort bringing singers together. I'm thinking not his big public pieces, the operas he basically invented, but the madrigal singing, which really brings people together in a social way.
Absolutely. This group really started as a social group. We're fortunate to have this little opportunity to perform for radio 11 years ago now, but it started with us singing together in church choirs in New York City, and we'd go out for a drink after and say, boy, the four of us should get together and do something. It'd be really fun. And thankfully, we had that opportunity, and it's one of the best things we get to do is to travel on the road together and not just make the music, but share new ideas about what we're working on. Our bass baritone just finished his doctorate, and he's teaching at the University of Oregon now. His specialty is early American quartets in the early days of the gramophone and recording. And our baritone has finished his doctorate at Juilliard. He's working on very early days of German immigrant hymn singing. And I'm specializing in concert programming, particularly with regard to liturgical music. So we share a lot of fun ideas in the car and listen to a lot of different kinds of music and share a lot of good food. And it's a real fun time together.
In the world of classical music, the label that you are associated with, the BIST label, is a very fine label, but it's located in Sweden. I'm just curious how you joined up with the BIST record label.
We were fortunate that we were looking to find a new label about 8 years ago, and one of their executives was in the States and was able to come to a concert, and he was dreadfully ill. He was afraid he'd have to cancel, but he came and said, well, I'll sit through the first half. And he liked it so much, he stayed for the second half and said, would you please come make records for us? And at that time, we were looking to get out of New York City because it's so noisy. And, you know, we do a really beautiful take and it'd be ruined by a car horn or a subway train. And so our first two records with them, we did in a little church about 60 kilometers northeast of Stockholm, where we could just sing all day and have good takes to choose from without having to worry about noise. Maybe one squeak of a bird outside, but it was a wonderful experience. And one recording we did in the middle of the winter, which was wonderful, but we only had about 3 hours of daylight. So it felt like you were always very sleepy. But it was a wonderful experience. And they have such fabulous engineers, and we're fortunate to work with one in particular, Jens Brown, who's just been nominated for a Gramophone Award, and he has a number of Grammys under his belt, and we're hoping he's going to help us get a third Grammy nomination, and hopefully we'll get a win this time. A couple of records in the coming months, one on Spanish Renaissance music, which we're very excited about, and another one focusing on some Franco-Flemish composers and then some contemporary pieces that have been written for us.
Will you have some recordings along with you that people can pick up?
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely, yeah.
May I ask about a specific project that I'm a little curious about that seems to combine the theory of evolution and sort of early music sounds?
I think you're talking about the Misa Charles Darwin, yeah. The composer is Greg Brown, who was a schoolmate of mine, and he came to a concert of ours, and we were and our bass baritone, Craig Phillips, had been looking at the writings of Charles Darwin, had seen a special, I think, on PBS about him, and the quote was made something that the writings of Charles Darwin are some of the most important writings in English, to be written except for maybe the Bible. There's some really wonderful, beautiful poetry, and so Craig was able to work with Greg Brown to create a libretto for this Misa Charles Darwin, where we take the formal structure of the ordinary of a Catholic Mass, a Kyrie, a Gloria, Sanctus, Agnus Dei, etc., and define texts that might mirror those aesthetics, but within the respectful words of Charles Darwin with his work in evolution. And so this piece has come to be, and we've performed it many times. We did a TED lecture about it, and we performed it 25 times. We sang it in Berlin at their Natural History Museum underneath the largest mounted dinosaur in the world, which is very cool. And Greg's brother, Dan Brown, is the author of Da Vinci Code and Angels and Demons and Lost Symbol. And so he has heard this piece many times and was so influenced by it that he wrote it into his new book, Origin. So we're fortunate to be in a novel by the great Dan Brown. So hopefully that will allow us a chance to do some more traveling and sing Greg Brown's Misa Charles Darwin.
It's just an extraordinary set of circumstances. Great story.
Absolutely. It's been a great surprise.
Well, Jeffrey Williams, could I hear a little about how you chose singing and singing as a countertenor as a profession?
Sure. I started singing as a choir boy, both in children's choirs in my community, and then I was fortunate to be a member of the American Boy Choir as a kid and do some traveling around the country and the world. And then after my voice change, I had to figure out what I wanted to do, whether I was a squeaky baritone or a shouty tenor. But I'd always been listening to records in my parents' living room and in my dad's car. And I was very attracted to older music. You know, I listened to Handel Messiah or some older pieces like that. And I heard some of the early countertenors of the recording age, Alfred Deller, for example. And I thought, what a wonderful sound. And I've been so interested in early music that I stopped being a mediocre baritone and really focused on singing countertenor. And I've been fortunate that there's so much wonderful repertoire out there. And so it's been a lot of fun. And thankfully, I was able to do it within the context of choral singing and ensemble singing, which is what I love best. I enjoy singing solos, but I really love singing in ensembles and in choirs and directing choirs now. So that's what I love to do. And it's the thing that's great about it is it's an interesting timbre of voice. And, you know, you'll have 10 countertenors in a room, you'll have 10 completely different voices. Though I suppose you could say the same thing for sopranos or basses.
What did you think of that high A that the opera singer at the Met hit in this recent production? Did you see that story in the Times?
I have seen the story, but I hadn't actually heard the high A. But I know... Thomas Edess is a wonderful composer. I'm very much looking forward to seeing it when it's next in my local theater. But I know Yestin Davies is in that program. He's just one of the class acts of countertenors these days. Fabulous artist and beautiful singer. And so I'm looking forward to seeing that one.
Well, it's very brief. I listened to the clip and she hits it for a microsecond, but it's there. With the holidays being a super busy season for most people, what are your thoughts on the importance of taking a moment to hear some music?
I think there's something special about hearing live music. One of the great things about being in New York is every now and again, you'll hear some musician playing on a subway or, I don't know, street corner. And sometimes they're not so great, but sometimes they're really quite good. And there's nothing like the vibration that happens in a live performance, whether you're in a concert hall or a church or on a street corner. And I think that's one of the things that can be so restorative about it is I find myself coming out of a performance, especially with singers, tired because I'll be listening and I'll be breathing with the singers. And there's so much that can be kind of cathartic about that because there's the intake of breath and the outtake of breath and listening to other humans work together. And especially with voices, because there's so much vulnerability there. There's not a button to push to play the right note or sing the right note. But the other thing that's wonderful about this repertoire is it's really for everybody. It's not just for those who celebrate Christmas. It's not just for those who are perhaps religious. It's very welcoming to people who do have a sort of spiritual background. But I think I've tried to create a program that doesn't just say, here's the Christmas story and this is how it goes. What we try and do is sing music that we think is going to reach a lot of different ears in a lot of different ways. So we have some music that has absolutely nothing to do with Bethlehem at all. There's one piece by Camille Saint-Saëns, the Serenade d'Hiver, Winter's Serenade, which is just about four guys who are in love with the same girl. And so they sing at her, and it's a bit of jollification in the middle of a mostly serious program. But, you know, there's some wonderful rhythmic bits to the older medieval pieces, and we have some very new pieces that have a real calm to them. And some of the Renaissance polyphony is so full of what I like to call fizz. It's just sort of a bubbling underneath the surface that makes you excited to carry on with your day.
If there's a selection I can play for our listeners now from the album Sing Thee Noel, what would you like to leave us with?
I'd suggest if I could suggest two things. One is Michael McGlynn's Opia Virgo Mater, or perhaps a piece written by a Norwegian composer, Andrew Smith, Noel, Arise and Wake. Both of these have old texts, but are set in a sort of neo-medieval style. So they can be sort of tear away the centuries, and it's just a wonderful
Well, Jeffrey Williams, it's been a pleasure to talk to you and look forward to seeing you in Kalamazoo this Friday. Thank you.
Our pleasure. Thank you.